It's time now for America in the Balance. Brought to you by Oklahomans for Sovereignty and Free Enterprise. And now your co-hosts, Amanda Teagarden and Don Wyatt.
And welcome, freedom-loving Oklahomans, to another hour of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is your host, Amanda Teagarden, in studio with Don Wyatt.
Delighted to be here and happy to be almost anywhere today, I guess.
As we have heard before, it beats the alternative.
Absolutely.
And we are broadcasting from Tulsa, Oklahoma, in the middle of the country, in the heartland, and the website that we're associated with is OK Safe. That's Oklahomans for Sovereignty and Free Enterprise, OK-SAFE.com. And our new website, which is dedicated to a single subject, ExposingHealthcareReform.com. And Don, you are associated with another group as well, the Tulsa 912 Project.
Exactly. We have a couple of websites. The one that I'm most specifically involved in is called Boondoggleblog.com. That's boondoggleblog.com. And we also have a website for our parent organization, which is simply Tulsa912project.com.
And you are part of an effort created the Tulsa Taxes Task Force.
Perfect pace. Any faster and you're asking for trouble, I've learned. Started. Yeah, we had a great meeting last night to give our members and activists an update on what we've been doing. We're going to be meeting with the Court of Tax Review, which is a specialized court set up to hear my protest against the budget process here. The scheduling conference will be next Tuesday afternoon, so we are underway.
And that's in Tulsa?
That meeting will be down in Oklahoma City, actually.
Oklahoma City. Yeah. So for our listeners who are not from Oklahoma, they can probably examine their cities or their municipalities' yep. budget process and find possibly the same problem?
Yeah, in fact, I think we're going to try to put a primer or a primer together to help other communities figure out the template that we followed here in prying loose some of this information and then look at what your state might provide in the way of statutory relief. And I think all citizens probably have the potential to do the kind of thing that we're doing here.
And very briefly, it was an overview of not enough transparency in the budget process.
Yeah, in short, we've got government trying to convince the taxpayers that they're much less of an operation, much smaller operation than they really are. They published in the paper the budget for last year to be about a $64 million entity, when in point of fact it's a more like $256 million entity, and they're just not disclosing to the public the full scope of their activities and operations.
So the citizens do have recourse if you know how to get engaged in
exactly
what you can do. Yeah. And I think you've mentioned earlier when you first filed this that this is a legal procedure that has hardly ever been exercised.
To the best of our knowledge, this particular procedure has never been used, and the laws have been on the books since 1965.
Well, trailblazer.
a little behind the time, but trailblazing nonetheless.
All right. Well, thank you for that update. We're going to have to have you back, and you can give us an announcement on what the result is.
Yep, that'd
all
be
right.
great.
The media was there last night, weren't they?
Yeah. Our local News on 6, our anchor person and her cameraman came to videotape. She's working on an expose feature. We also had some nice coverage from the local newspaper last Saturday and Sunday, giving an overview of what our organization's been doing for the last year. So it's been helpful.
Before we started recording, you were mentioning that a lot of candidates were in attendance, and one in particular that I wanted to talk to you about is a gentleman running for Corporation Commission.
Brooks Mitchell. Right.
Brooks Mitchell, yeah. And he's running for the office that's currently held by Bob Anthony.
Correct.
A very long-term serving.
24 years.
Yeah. Anyway. Well-known person, but the issue that...
Well thought of, too, I might add.
Well thought of, but the issue that states are facing and that are in the purview of the corporation commissions are the smart meters. And so
That's exactly right.
I've seen Brooks Mitchell, we're asking, just like, what about the smart meters?
And we asked him last night.
And what was his response?
His response, well, he started a little ambiguous. He hasn't polished this response yet, and that's okay. So long as we get the honest assessment, I don't mind how polished it sounds. But he finally reached the point of saying that we need an opt-out. He wouldn't actually come to the point of saying we don't want to do it, period, and we don't want to permit it, but he did recognize that there's a lot of citizens with various levels and reasons for discomfort with smart meters, and so he said that he would ensure that there was at least an opt-out for all citizens. So that's a start.
It is a start, and it's a question that you need to ask in your own state. If you have a corporation commission race, ask them about smart meters and their position on it.
And ask them, as we did last night, about Agenda 21, and if you get a blank stare, say, oh, don't worry, we'll teach you.
We'll let you know. There's across this country, there's pushback against Agenda 21, all the way up to the Republican Party, which normally is kind of unaware of what's going on in reality world,
right.
But they have issued a resolution against UN Agenda 21 Sustainable Development, and they actually use the phrase UN Agenda 21
That's
Sustainable
right.
Development, which is a big leap forward for them.
It is, and it's kind of a breakthrough in terms of the dialogue and conversation, too, because it's been sheltered and buried under
conspiracy theory.
Well, that, but it's also been concealed under nice-sounding buzzwords like sustainable and
comprehensive development plans.
Yes.
Well, we're talking today. We've got a returning guest. It's one of my favorite people, is Vicki Davis, who is a former computer systems analyst and an excellent researcher. And I think that this country owes her a great debt of gratitude
as
the amount of work that she's done and the research that she's been engaged in for the last probably 10 years. And her website is channelingreality.com. And we're going to be talking, Don, about a little bit about those smart meters.
Yes.
She has filed a case against the Idaho Public Utilities Commission challenging the installation of a smart meter on her home. It was a joint claim.
Right.
And she's going to be giving us an update on that.
Right.
And then we're going to talk about something. These are all related to sustainable development. We're going to be talking about a document that's been found and this initiative. You're starting to hear low carbon, right?
I sure am.
Low carbon economy.
Yeah.
And peak oil. And
peak oil.
We need to transition to different types of energy.
Yeah. In other words, even if we still have energy, pretend like we don't and quit using it.
We need to live like pre-Columbian times. Anyway, so today's subject guest, Vicki Davis, is going to discuss smart meters case in Idaho and the claim filed with the Idaho Public Utilities Commission. And also, what is the Transition Initiative Primer? And is there a worldwide effort to transition communities to a low carbon type of town? Yes, there is. That's the short answer.
That's right.
A low carbon economy. We're going to talk about that a little bit. And I just wanted to bring your attention to this, Don, that the U.S. and China signed a memorandum of understanding in mid-2009 that they agree that both economies, those large economies, are going to transition to a low-carbon economy.
Charming, huh?
So the question is, what are we all going to have to give up? And our guest is Vicki Davis. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
It's always a delight. And we were having quite a good conversation before we started recording. It's like, we better start recording.
Interrupted that really good conversation to try to get
record. I love talking to you guys because you understand the whole big picture, and that's really refreshing, you know, to be able to just talk.
It is nice to talk, and we're going to have a researcher summit at some point in time.
Hey, that's a good idea.
Yeah. All right. So just briefly give our listeners, we've had prior interviews, and if you can go to the America in the Balance website and scroll down, you'll see prior interviews on this smart meter battle in Idaho. And Vicki, will you give us an update on where that case stands?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, first, in August of last year, Idaho Power sent an installer to my house to install the smart meter. I said no, thank you. We had letters going back and forth and phone calls, and then finally, one day, Idaho Power showed up at my door with the deputy sheriff and they forced the installation of the smart meter. So I filed a complaint with the Idaho Public Utilities Commission. And in the meantime, another lady here in my town, she found me on the internet by searching on smart meter. And so she filed a complaint at the same time because the Idaho Public Utilities Commission ordered Idaho Power to implement the meters on a mandatory basis, no opt-out at all. And so we both filed at the same time. And what the Idaho Public Utilities Commission did was to open a case, which means that we had legitimate claims, but they combined our cases together. And then they issued a summons to Idaho Power, which Idaho Power did respond to. And then the other complainant, Bonnie Ment, and I both responded to Idaho Power's answer. What the Idaho Public Utilities Commission did then was to simply dismiss our case, saying that basically Idaho Power was giving facts and we were just, you know, giving, they didn't say nonsense, but that was the implication that, that's what I took from it. So what I did is that I filed an appeal. And I requested that they separate Bonnie's case from mine and that they open up new cases for each of us to reconsider them.
All right. Now, yours was on the your case was based on the technology and Bonnie Ment's case was based on health concerns, correct?
That's right.
So you wanted to separate those two subjects.
Right. Because I can prove my case. I mean, the essence of my case is that there is no firewall on the wiring of my home. And once that meter is installed on my house, I've lost control over the devices in my home. All the options are Idaho Power's and the Idaho Public Utilities Commission in terms of how much regulatory authority they exert over the devices in my home. And so, and I have volumes of documentation on the capabilities of the smart grid and smart meters. And the end goal of the smart grid and smart meters is to control the consumer's use of electricity.
Right.
Now, having said that, what Vicki is saying is a point of fact, and the idea is to reduce our carbon usage or reduce carbon emissions. And when I was searching around on the issue, you can do a search on YouTube, for instance, on low carbon living.
Right.
And you get a whole lot of information that's out there. And Benjamin, do you have that video, that audio ready? It's a short clip, and I want to listen to these two people in Sweden describing a particular kind of data meter that you can attach to your wall in your home. You ready?
If you're serious about reducing your energy consumption, quite important to know how much energy you're using, how much you used to use, how much you're using now with the new technology in place. In order to do that more easily, Vattenfall, the Swedish company, has introduced a new technology that allows monitors. Anders, please, can you tell us more about this software?
Thank you, Chris. Yes, this is a new software we have just developed within Vattenfall. It will help our customers to understand how much they are using the energy minute by minute. We can, for instance, here the vacuum cleaner we put on just a minute ago. But you can also follow it during the month or the week, and you'll learn to know about your consumption.
So you compare how much you used last week with this week.
Exactly. Okay. That is, of course, necessary. You should be able to change behavior, use it in a more efficient way.
Are there any other features that's worth highlighting?
Software? Yes, of course. We're very proud of this. We have some sort of analysis where you can follow how much this will cost you. And it's not on an overall level, which is on the heat and the water level. It's also how much you're using for the consumption in the household itself, for the furnace. Set. But then we have also a feature where you can put in, and this technology will identify the different users within your house, and you will learn by yourself finding out where do I use most of the energy, where can I influence. Coming back, the easiest one is compare the vacuum.
Okay, thank you. So there you had it, the easiest way to kind of keep track of how much you're spending and on what.
Thank you, Benjamin. Now, the accent you heard was Swedish, yes. And the guy was wearing a green sweater. And I was telling Don.
You could hear it, couldn't you?
I could hear that wearing a green sweater. Every other video that guy's on, he's wearing the same green sweater. Poor guy. They have one
That's
sweater.
One of those subliminals, right?
Yeah.
And the irony is that this new lifestyle that he's trying to perfect is so wonderful that he's absolutely committed to that for the rest of his life, I'm sure.
He is. But the interesting thing is that that software exists. They're already working on it. And in this case, it's advocated that it's like you as the consumer of the energy, can monitor and alter, as it says.
That's right.
You can compare how much you used to use.
That's right.
And it will help customers know how to change your behavior.
Behavior, yes.
You need to change your behavior. Yeah, yeah. Now, just imagine, that's the technology that the utility
that's
companies
right.
are going to have once a smart meter is attached on the house. That data is not available. It is available not only to you in your house, but to them.
In fact, for now, it's only available to them. They're not making it readily available to the consumers. They're not taking that tact with it yet.
That is correct. That's from the provider's standpoint right now. They're able to see that.
Right.
And right down to the vacuum, as you could hear what he was saying, you could actually see which appliance was using
that's
which
right.
energy because, as Vicki has explained before, your appliances have a signature,
that's right.
and they can tell what you're using. And
yep.
then, you know, they can make decisions about your energy consumption and then change those,
yep.
either voluntarily or involuntarily.
The programs are called demand side management, and all consumers are on the demand side. So they're telling everybody, it's just that I think, you know, most people can't really comprehend the idea that the utility company wants to control their use of electricity in their home.
Right down to the vacuum cleaner.
Well, the consumers are used to being manipulated, I think I'd have to admit, but we are usually manipulated just by price. In other words, if the gasoline price goes up, then we tend to try to hunt for ways to buy less of it or buy it less often. But this, I think, is a bit more sinister because they're actually going to control whether or not the power flows to your connection box.
Yeah. Well, when once they get all the system in place, then they'll unroll how really heinous this program is. But at this point, they're just kind of doing the soft sell,
right.
saying that you'll save money, you know,
right.
but that really isn't true.
Of course not.
Because the Public Utilities Commission and the utility companies have made deals that the utility companies won't lose any money by implementing efficiency programs.
Right.
So it doesn't matter how much you save in the way of kilowatt hours, just the price of the kilowatt hour will go up.
Right. They're trying to avoid a situation we ran into in Tucson, which is kind of funny. While I lived there, there was a period when we had a real water availability shortage. This is before the Central Arizona Project had run water all the way down to the Tucson area for recharging the aquifer there. And so they were encouraging citizens to cut back on their water use. And they had this huge campaign on radio and TV, and people were well-intentioned and tried to cooperate and cut back on their water use. They were hoping for about a 5 to 8% reduction in water use. What they got was a 20% reduction in water use. This is in summertime. And the outcome of that was a huge drop in the revenue to the water company. And so they screamed and hollered and demanded an adjustment of rates so that they wouldn't lose money. And so the moral to the story to the citizens was, we overdid it. We saved too much. And as soon as you save too much, then the economic models of the regulated utilities no longer work. And then they have to recapture that money another way. So boy, did we feel like we got double whammied on that one.
Right. And I'll tell you exactly when that happened. That happened right around 2000, 2001, right?
Exactly. Yes.
Yes. Well, that was the same time that Enron was arbitraging the market.
Exactly.
And they did the very exact same thing here. They tried to say that there was a drought here. And I remember seeing the public service ad and the news article about how they had to shut off the water to the public restrooms on the highway because there was just such a water shortage. Well, Idaho has never had a water shortage like that. I mean, we've got the Snake River running through the whole state.
Right.
And the it gets low sometimes, but just a one-year drought isn't enough to have Idaho have that kind of water shortage.
Right. It was a ruse. The whole thing was a ruse. You're absolutely
correct.
It
certainly was. And in the Idaho Public Utilities files, or Utilities Commission files, they talk about how the Public Utilities Commission just jumped right into action with all of these efficiency programs. And among them was ordering Idaho Power to produce a comprehensive demand side management program. And that really was the initiation of the smart meter, smart grid project in Idaho.
In our state, it was a couple of years ago, the Speaker of the House authored a bill on Oklahoma Energy, Clean Energy Act or something, and it was about allowing the utility companies to move toward demand-side management right. technologies. And that was the Republican-led House, and that was his bill, and it passed.
That's right. Yeah.
So we are moving, we're seeing that move toward that. We've only got about three more minutes until the bottom of the first half of this. So where is your case right now? Where is it right now? You're going to try to go to the Idaho Supreme Court, aren't you?
If they don't find it in my favor, I will go to the Idaho Supreme Court. Right now, the status of it is that they are reconsidering it. And, so the ball is in their court, and I don't know what they're going to do with it. I'm sure they would like me to just go away, but I'm not going to. I mean, I will fight it to the very end.
Are there any scheduled dates for follow-up hearings or anything of that sort?
Not yet.
Okay.
But I do know that I was talking to one of our state legislators a few nights ago, and it was at a political event. Our sheriffs are elected, and so it was an event to meet with one of the candidates. And there was a state legislator there. And when I told him about my situation with the deputy sheriff coming with Idaho Power to force the installation of the meter, he was shocked. He was under the impression that the smart meter was voluntary.
Right.
That's what they were told.
Yeah.
And so voluntary. I said, well, no.
Voluntary, so we're going to show up with a gun.
Yeah.
This is a voluntary meter.
Yeah,
take it.
Yeah. We've read about those kinds of voluntary programs in other countries before, haven't we?
Vicki, are these documents that your case filings, are all of these posted on your website?
I have links to both my responses, and I do have a link to the case file on the Idaho Public Utilities Commission website, where you can get the whole case from beginning to end.
I think that's important for people to know in other states who are fighting the smart meters, so that right. they can see what the arguments are and the technology that's involved.
Right, right.
Yeah, and I call it IPUC case record on smart meters. It's just right there in the center column.
And IPUC is Idaho Public Utilities Commission.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. And we're going to get into the second half. We're going to start talking about this document that was sent to you by another researcher, Debbie Niwa in Arizona, sent it to you, and you sent it out to a lot of people. And it's a document that was entitled Transition Initiative Primer, or Primer, depending on where you're from. And it is a 51-page PDF, and it is advocating becoming a transition town, city, district, village, community, or even island. And it looks like it was published roughly around 2009, updated in 2011, in the fall of 2011. And I'm going to read a section of a memorandum of understanding that was signed in the middle of 2009 between the U.S. and China when Barack Obama was there visiting with those leaders.
Right.
And it says, the purpose of this memorandum of understanding is to strengthen and coordinate our respective efforts to combat global climate change, promote clean and efficient energy, protect the environment and natural resources, and support environmentally sustainable and low-carbon economic growth.
Bunch of buzzwords.
Toward this end, both countries intend to transition to a low-carbon economy, carry out policy dialogue, and cooperate on capacity building and research, development and deployment of climate-friendly technology. The key sentence there is, toward this end, both countries intend to transition to a low-carbon economy.
They really have done that in China, too, haven't they? Oh, yeah, I've seen the examples of the spewing they've still got from their smokestacks over there.
Well, the people are living low-carbon. They don't have washers and dryers in their apartments. And they hang the laundry over the balcony. And these beautiful, on the outside, looks like a very pristine, sophisticated, new type of apartments
rise,
and condominiums. And they have nothing inside.
Yeah.
700 square feet for a family of, well, three.
1.1.
1.1. It's like, holy cow. Yeah, low-carbon. You get one child. Anyway, there's the music. We're going to take a brief break. This is America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. Our special guest today is Vicki Davis, and we'll be right back.
To promote your business on the internet? The Truth in Focus Radio Network reaches listeners locally in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and all across the United States. The shift is on from traditional media to internet marketing. Stay on the cutting edge with your business. Advertise with us today. Email radio at truthinfocus.org. You heard the word, so will they. Email us at radio at truthinfocus.org. And welcome back to the second half of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio with my co-host Don Wyatt.
Yep, I love that song. I'm so glad that we've got that saved for perpetuity, and all of our posterity can now enjoy the limbo rock.
How low can you go?
Exactly.
That's this is a new theme song.
It's hard to find songs about how low can you go. It's,
low carbon.
Yeah, low carbon, exactly.
So how low can you go? And that's going to be the challenge to us. By the way, that was Chubby Checker.
You know, on a sadder note, that as soon as that song started playing, I was reminded that we just lost Dick Clark. And he was so associated with the rise of that early rock and roll era. And when I heard the song, I immediately thought of him. And it's a loss.
It is a loss because we're all getting older.
We are.
It's a part of our lives that are gone.
Like George Burns once said, he's the only one left. All my friends are dead.
Yeah. I was always interested in Chubby Checker as a kid because of his name, and he came out that they picked that name in response to Fats Domino.
That's right.
So it would, yeah, anyway.
It was a play on the.
Yeah, Fats. Yeah. Anyway, we're completely off topic here, but.
But well, it's actually, fun.
But it is. But how low can you go? The idea of that song is that's what we're going to be challenged to achieve is how low can you go in using producing carbon? And carbon is necessary for life.
Yep.
You're not going to have plants.
That's exactly
you're not
right.
going to have a normal life without carbon. And then to characterize it as a hazardous material or some sort of a bad thing
yeah.
is contrary to actual science.
Yeah.
But we're moving toward these low-carbon economies. And, Vicki, when you sent out this document, you said this is a giant leap backward. And
well said.
That's exactly what it is. So let's talk about this Transition Initiative Primer. Primer, this 51-page document that was issued roughly around the idea came around the same time the U.S. and China signed this Memorandum of Understanding to transition to a low-carbon economy. And that includes the European Union. They have those same kind of agreements where they're going to be transitioning to a low-carbon economy. And by golly, wouldn't we all love to live in Europe? That was sarcasm.
My teeth are too good to live there.
Yeah, speaking of that, this is from the UK and Ireland. It's like, we don't have to. That was Don.
I'm sorry.
So
behave.
So let's talk about the really bright people from the UK and Ireland who produced this. And Vicki, what is this Transition Initiatives Primer about?
Well, this is the strategy for easing a community in a transition, obviously, is easing a community into a reduced carbon footprint.
Well, their premise to begin with, Vicki, is that we will no longer be able to live the way we are now because we're going to not have oil available. And they get this thing that looks kind of like a standard deviation chart that illustrates that we're now on the downside of oil availability, and the presumption is energy availability in general is on the wane, and this period was going to occur sometime between 2006 and 2012. Well, what year are we in now?
And 2012.
Yeah, and has peak oil actually occurred yet? I don't think so, but that's a different point altogether, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, they've been doing this a long time, and I know you've had Patrick Wood on your program to talk about technocracy
right.
and the idea of moving to an economic, to energy as the basis for an economy, for a monetary trading system
right.
as opposed to a monetary system based on a commodity.
Right.
And so, and the interesting thing about this document is that you can see it so clearly because they talk about M. King Hubbard, who was the leader of the technocracy movement back in the 1930s. And this is the transition plan to move to a technocratic system.
Gosh, healthcare reform falls right into this. And
it all does.
You know,
this plan that they're doing is so massive, it's really difficult to wrap your brain around it because it's not just a local thing. It's not just a national thing. It is a global thing. And when right before the program started, I started to tell you about a global development conference that was being broadcast on C-SPAN. And it's a very important program to watch because they're actually talking about this whole transition. And there was one guy from India who had some statistics about the amount of electricity usage varying between countries. You know, people in the United States use about 12,000 kilowatt hours. Over in different countries, they used, 6,000 and 3,000 and... His premise is that if we reduce our electricity consumption, it's going to somehow help Kenya, which is absurd.
It is absurd.
It's just it's fallacious. It's ridiculous. But what they have done, they've come up with a term called energy intensity. And so they're measuring our entire energy consumption into one value, energy intensity, and we're supposed to reduce our energy intensity. Well, that means that electric ratepayers who are using hydropower, we have to reduce our consumption of hydropower because California has all these cars on the road and they're using lots of oil. for gasoline. it makes no logical sense at all.
And it'll really reduce our electric usage if we all wind up switching or being forced to switch to electric cars, won't it?
Well, yes, and that's why they need to manage. That's something I wanted to say, is for people to understand that this smart grid is just one gigantic IT system. It's nothing more than an IT system, and computer systems, information technology systems, are management systems. And so they intend to be able to manage our use of electricity so that when they have an electric charging station, if they're real busy at the electric charging station, then they can reduce our consumption of electricity to, provide them with the electricity that they need. Fact that nobody has electric cars, that doesn't matter.
Yeah, the Volt simply hasn't done as well as they had hoped, has it?
No. And those batteries are really expensive. I mean, our government is funding through grants the building of manufacturing facilities for batteries for cars that nobody has.
Well, wait a minute. You can't put batteries in a landfill right now because of acid that's in it and the contents. So what are we supposed to do with everybody going to electric batteries in their cars? Where's that supposed to go?
It's going to create a bigger problem than the waste out of the nuclear
plants. I thought the environmentalists wanted the electric cars. Yeah. What are you going to do with
Not to mention the mercury that's in the light bulbs.
There you go.
So there you have the whole fraud that this is about environmentalism and saving the earth. It's not. It's about control.
Absolutely.
I've never really been fond of the idea of an electric car. I mean, just try to turn on your flashlight and then you watch the light go off because the battery's dead. So you're away from home and your battery dies on your car. What are you going to do? You can't go get a gallon of electricity and pour it in there.
It's not an easily carried commodity, is it?
Holy, did you ever watch the Flintstones? They'll put pedals in the cars.
And the brakes will be you dragging your feet.
Right.
This is a great car.
A dynomobile.
It just is mind-boggling that I remember hearing one of the State of the Union addresses when George W. Bush was president, and he was talking about these alternative energy sources. And here we are. At that time, I was still thinking that we were the greatest nation in the world, most developed, and we would be setting an example for other countries. And he was talking about alternative energy sources, and the greatest country in the world was going to be thinking about ways to use up wood chips to produce energy.
Sawgrass. Algae now.
We've descended into that.
Yeah.
It's
this
just
is
amazing.
The great leap backwards. It is.
Well,
it truly is.
It's as though they can't convince us to return to primitive lifestyles for other reasons, so they'll force us by depriving us of energy access.
They are. But now, when you sent this, you sent several links to the transition effort. And if you go to transition... transition.com. It's a website, and they've already started, just like they would have with the sustainable development efforts, is little divisions or different branches of transition groups, okay?
Right.
Kind of like meetup groups that are in multiple cities. And I looked at Oklahoma, and we've got a transition OKC and a transition Tulsa. And this is part of this transition United States, because you have to designate which country it is, because there's transition UK.
Right.
Transition Ireland, transition wherever.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, the big question for all those aspects of life that our community needs in order to sustain itself and thrive how we do, significantly increase resilience in response to peak oil, drastically reduce carbon emissions in response to climate change, and strengthen our local community in response to economic instability. So they're really advocating local gardening. This is
open space.
Open space, yeah. But how you can prepare and learn how to do things in a more simple manner. Now, I was listening to their reading some of their activities, and it sounds like, Don, what...
Preppers.
Preppers. It is
exactly.
Like, these are the people that would be considered dangerous
That's
by
right.
the Department of Homeland Security as it's, far as extremists because
what a
they're
delicious
stockpiling,
irony.
Stockpiling yeah. things and preparing on how to live in case there's a catastrophe.
That's right.
Or government takes over and shuts down everything. But these people are doing it.
So
and
it's okay.
Isn't that an interesting irony?
So now it's okay if these people are doing it. It says Transition Tulsa, for instance, it all started, this is from their document, Transition Tulsa. It all started in the spring of 2011 when a small collection of motivated individuals in the Tulsa area came together with a shared concern. How can our community respond to the challenges and opportunities of peak oil, climate change, and the economic crisis? This small team of people formed an initiating group, studied the transition handbook in a series of meetings, and then adopted the transition model with the intention of engaging people in the Tulsa community. So it's in transition on how to basically reduce your carbon footprint.
Right.
And it follows kind of like the same ideas of growing your own food, which is what a lot of preppers are doing.
That's right.
Seed collections, blog sites, etc.
How to enthusiastically embrace becoming primitive again.
Right. So now you need to just, if you are preparing as a prepper for catastrophes and want to fly under the radar, just say you're part of Transition Tulsa or
there
something.
There you go. And then it's okay.
Then it'll be okay.
And they've got this 12-step plan that just cracked me up. Step four is organizing a great unleashing. There's something
about
that.
What the heck does that mean?
I'm sorry. I can't do this with a straight face. Facilitate
actually,
the great reskilling.
Lay the foundation. Study. This reminds me of the study circle stuff. Form working groups.
Yeah, and
now they're a government.
That's
use
right.
open space.
Yep.
Develop visible, practical manifestations of the project. What does that?
Create an energy descent plan. That means how to get by with less and ultimately no energy. What are we trying to accomplish?
You'll appreciate this. And this is in item number 7. Develop visible, practical manifestations of the project.
Right.
In Transition Town Totnes, the food group launched a project called Totnes, the Nut Tree Capital of Britain. Enough said.
Well, we used to refer to California as the land of the fruit and the nuts.
And they actually got people to have their picture taken with that. Wow.
It's amazing, isn't
well,
it?
Well, anyway... this is all part of the sustainable development. And the idea, first off, you have to believe a big lie. One
right.
is that climate change is man-made, anthropogenic.
Right.
Number two, that peak oil. The second big lie is that oil's running out.
Well, the theory of peak oil, simply stated, is that we will reach a point when oil costs as much in oil to extract as the oil that gets extracted. And their theory is, by definition, that will make oil no longer available, which I think is a preposterous leap. There's no sound engineering or economic justification for that argument at all.
Don, I'm an old retailer, former retailer. You know how you reduce the cost?
There's a lot of ways to reduce costs.
One way is you introduce competition. You
Absolutely.
Have more people drilling for oil.
Absolutely.
That's how you're going to reduce the cost.
Yeah. And their premise was that the U.S., in continental, the lower 48 states of the U.S., had already reached peak oil in 1972, meaning that we had reached our absolute maximum output of oil in the continental U.S. in 1972, which is just a bald-faced lie.
What about that reserve that's found up in the Dakotas?
Yeah, I mean, like I say, it's just our production in lower 48 is higher now than it was then.
There's lots of oil off the coast of California.
Absolutely.
When I was a kid, I lived there, and those facilities on the coast there, Vallejo, and actually all along the coast of California, they were all massively producing oil. There's lots of oil in California.
There's a monster. Popular soundbite that President Obama has been using lately, that we have to change our lifestyles because the U.S. only has 2% of the world's oil reserves, but we use 20% of the world's oil, which is just another bald-faced lie. That 2% number is so misleading. That comes from a category that they call proven reserves, and proven reserves means they're already pumping it. If you go to a more logical category of likely or probable reserves, there's more than we'll use in 100 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they could go to nuclear. I mean, east, they use a lot of fuel oil.
Yep. Or coal.
For heat.
Yeah. The sources of energy are still, I think, plentiful on this planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are. But you know, like I said before, this is about control.
It is.
They're using the environment, but what they really want is control.
Absolutely so.
When I was watching some of those videos today, trying to pick one that we would actually use for this radio show, that if you go to YouTube and do a search on low carbon living, you'll see a whole list of things that you can watch. And one of them was back to Sweden again, where they're doing these test projects. This family was part of a family of four, a man and a wife and two kids, lived in this square box prefab building, and which had a little awning for their little box for the front door area. Now, this is Sweden where it snows and stuff. But
you bet it does.
Yeah, it's cold. So there they are in this lot, in a wooded lot next to some other homes. But here's this square box hut, and all the sides are glass panels, which are solar panels. And the builder of it, the designer of it, said that this is going to be low carbon, low energy usage, because it produces its own usage and energy, and eventually you'll be able to sell that energy back to the utility company. So they had the four people go in there and live there for 6 months, and they had their little box of stuff that they could take in. And after a while, they interviewed the guy at the end of the experiment and said, well, how did you achieve it? The goal was to move from 7 tons of carbon emission, however they measured that, to 1 ton of carbon emission. And they got down to 1.5, and they interviewed the gentleman on the way out, who's very skinny, by the way.
If he just quit breathing, it would have made their target number.
He said it's doable. You have to make some modifications to your lifestyle. It is doable. And, of course, remember, they left after 6 months. And he said what we had to do in order to achieve it was eat less meat and more vegetables because, well, number one, meat production consumes energy to produce it, whatever. Right. Plus, you have to cook it.
That's right.
And they were trying to reduce their energy consumption. So here what they are trying to promote, really, vegetarianism. And, of course, smaller families. We were talking earlier, I don't know what the demographics are in Sweden per se, but if they're having a replacement birth rate high enough to replace the Swedish people. But if they continue to opt into that kind of a lifestyle, they're not going to have a replacement population. It's pretty soon you'll see the end of the Swedish or whatever demographic chooses to live like this.
They'll have Sharia law. Sharia law will be alive and well there soon.
You could actually begin to see the end of certain types of people who believe this lie. And number one, minimize the size of their family, begin to live a minimal life, and not actually do what God commissioned us to do, which be fruitful and multiply, and take dominion over the earth.
Exactly.
So one is leaning toward death in a way.
That's right.
And
well,
the other is leaning toward life.
Exactly. And the leaning towards death is pervasive. It applies to the way they approach environment, and it applies to the way they approach laws and life and
Regulation,
yeah, exactly right.
Well, this whole thing is suicidal. I mean, just saying it straight out, it's suicidal to an economy, it's suicidal to people, it's suicidal towards our environment. It's really, the more you understand of what they are talking about and what their plans are, the more psychotic you see that it is. And it really is.
That's well said. I can't think of a thing to add to that. You're absolutely correct. That is what it boils down to.
One of the little videos there was talking. It was showing people using a bicycle to generate, or demonstrating how to use a bicycle to generate energy, electricity.
Right.
And you were talking about a meeting with cappuccino maker.
Oh yeah,
what was this? Who was mentioning
the Occupy Wall Street people in New York at that park? The Uptown people had a bicycle machine that used bicycle power to power the cappuccino maker. And so, I don't know, I guess you have to work out before you can have a cup of cappuccino.
I guess you could use them to power those slot machines in Vegas, too, but what's the point?
Hey, there you go.
If you ever look at the history of the washing machine, in the creation of a washing machine used to be that, you know, the tub with the scrub board in it, in a big tub, and then a lot of ringing and scrub, 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 ring, ring, ring. And then there was the crank of the turning the paddles in
I've
the tub.
I've used those before, by the way.
Yeah. Well, I saw a picture of this once in the history of the transition of the washing machines. It actually was a person on a bicycle that was turning a belt.
Drive belt.
A drive belt. And the drive belt was turning the tub there so it could swish the clothes and rinse
them. Slush, slush,
slush. I'm just picturing it's like, okay, like you said, great leap backward. We are going to go back.
That's creating jobs.
That's creating jobs.
That was the benefit of modern society, was that people would have, rather than spending all of their time on survival, they would have time for other pursuits.
Exactly. And it looks like a certain percentage of them have found pursuits whose purpose is to drive us back to that survival-only mode.
But you know what? You'll still have an iPhone, won't you?
I don't know what we'll have.
If they have their way,
the answer is probably no, because in totalitarian states, communication is anathema.
But
you can't permit people to communicate.
But you could have limited communication. I mean, everybody in China's got a phone.
Only one way to the state, probably.
Yeah. It's just an amazing, the vision of some of these people who do not have God is just amazing. And contrary to common sense, as you've pointed out, there's no logic in the reasoning. If you start to take it apart, there's actually no logic in
it
is based on a lie.
It's amazing how much federal money is available for research and grants and studies in this kind of false science, too.
Well, yes, and there was a very important program, another one on C-SPAN this morning. It was a House hearing on manufacturing and job creation in the United States. And that was another program where they're actually talking openly about the agenda. And you'll be able to hear how your tax dollars are required for this new economy of technology development in order to meet this global goal of reducing the carbon footprint.
Can you say the title of that again, where you would send people to hear that?
It's on C-SPAN, and it was a congressional hearing on advanced manufacturing and job creation. And what I'll do is I'll send you the link, Amanda, and you can maybe post it on your website.
I'll put it on the blog.
Yeah, because the way C-SPAN is set up now, they don't just put the programs in time sequence that they occurred. They put them in category.
Yeah,
they made it a little bit more difficult to navigate their website.
All right, thank you. In this Transitions Initiative primer, one of them, one of the points, number 12, is create an energy descent plan. And they show a hot air balloon descending. And it says, this is real quick, each working group will have been focusing on practical actions to increase community resilience and reduce the carbon footprint. Combined, these actions form the Energy Descent Action Plan. That's where the collective genius of the community has designed its own future, take account of the potential threats from peak oil and climate change. The process of building the Energy Descent Plan is not a trivial task. It's evolving as we figure out what works and what doesn't work. So part of this transition network is to transition people from using oil, driving cars that use gas, using appliances in your home, those kind of things, all the things that are similar goals and or objectives of sustainable development are really being pushed at the local level. In some ways, people are supposed to voluntarily do this.
Yeah, these are the real flat earthers, aren't they? These are the people really wanting to push us back to the Anasazis or something.
They also want you to partner with your government to do this, though.
Excuse me.
Well, that's all right. But what they want you to do is not just for they themselves, and they're now supposed to make a connection with their local government
to
change policies.
That's right. Yep, exactly.
Then they're dangerous.
That's
yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, that collective genius of the community. A friend of mine, Debbie Niwa, found that Northwestern University, one of the professors there, had a project called the ABCD Community Asset Survey. The purpose of this survey was to find out all of the non-monetary or non-economic talents and skills of people in the community. And, you know, she found this a number of years ago. And at the time, we thought this is really bizarre. But people that, like that can crochet, or people that have wood carving skills, or, you know, just all these kinds of skills that people have that really are not on the market for sale. So the community doesn't know that they have these skills. Well, the purpose of this survey and community assessment was to catalog all of these skills that the community has. And you can see now what the reason for it is. It's so that they know the total asset base of the community in terms of skills.
So we can go back and find all of the guys that know how to make buggy whips and those that know how to make barrels, the coopers.
Sure, you can go, those that can carve arrows.
You can go to Williamsburg and see the same thing right now.
Actually, you know, I was thinking as a practical matter, that's good to know who can do what.
Yeah, preppers pay attention to that, too.
Well, I mean, you would. Like, who has medical training?
Exactly.
Who can offer medical services?
Exactly. Three-man militias focus on that as well.
Who can sew? Who's got a plow? Who's got a tractor?
That's right.
Who's got a... So, I mean, there's some practicality, the practical aspect of that, and I can see where that's going to appeal to the older people who maybe have been transitioned out of jobs because of the advances in
technology. Honoring the elders is one of the 12 steps.
It is, yeah. Well, we should honor the elders. I see. This is going to be very appealing to a lot of people.
I have to tell my son that, right?
You are.
There you go.
Honor the elders.
Not for the right reasons, but that's what they
say. But not for the right. But it's very practical. You would want to do an inventory of who can do what. If everything is changed, altered, taken away, how would you live? How would you be able to survive?
Exactly.
So, again, this is a similarity to, as you said, the preppers.
Yeah.
We're doing the same thing in to say who can do what.
Yeah.
In case there's, but from the different perspective, in case the government shuts everything down.
So if these guys that we're reading about and talking about today succeed, then those of us that are preppers will be driven to use the skill sets that we've formed for the same reasons.
Lock and load.
There you go.
Sorry, that's to defend yourself against the other.
What a giant loop we're caught in.
It is, and it's so... It just boggles the mind because it is so huge, but they're bringing it right down into your neighborhood. And really, if you take a look at the whole thing, what is it? It's like they're creating a world based on the concept of disaster.
Yep.
A disaster is going to come,
that's
right. We've got to all hunker down and conserve, reduce.
Well, they've reached they've reached the point that the public will no longer clamor for more government, except in the case of what's a perceived crisis. And so they fabricate crises for the public to clamor, well, somebody needs to do something about this. And all of a sudden, there's an authorization for more intrusion into our freedoms.
Well, now let's think about that. Is it possible, Don, that one of those crises could be that one of your neighbors has more than you?
Or
is maybe living a little too large?
Apparently, that's a serious crisis. We're hearing a lot about that right now.
They had the lights on.
What these people are doing, though, they're killing the real economy.
Oh, totally, yeah. And that's on purpose,
and
too.
And so people who have had jobs and worked all their life in the real economy are suddenly thrown out into the cold and say, you're on your own, buddy. Go get retraining.
Yeah.
And so then they send you to retraining for a new job in a clean field, you know, which might be something like being a nurse's aide, changing diapers in an old folks' home.
Or raising rice. There's a sentence in this number 8 of this 12 step on the facilitate the great reskilling that just cracks me up. It says one of the most useful things a transition initiative can do is to reverse the great de-skilling of the last 40 years by offering training in a range of some of these skills. So they're going to teach us how to remaster the stuff that our grandparents had to contend with that they thought we had made progress by no longer having to worry about. My father remembers collecting cow chips to burn for fuel because there was no wood to be found or purchased. I guess we're heading back there.
I just see that the idea, a lot of people are nostalgic for the way things used to be. I'm included in that because it was perceived to be a simpler life. And a lot of that just predates the internet and our betters being in charge of our economy and the foreign trade policies and the free trade agreements, et cetera, which is really the fault or the reason for our economy's tanking is because of the globalists. It's not because of what people's activities have been. It's because the global policies have caused this to happen.
That's right.
So there's something appealing about this. I like some of these things myself.
Sure.
I
think it's packaged for that very reason.
Yeah. And but to do it voluntarily is one thing, but to do it because you believe a lie is flies in the face of not only logic, but you don't do things based on a lie. You do things because you have the
truth.
Innate desire to do so and the right to engage in these kinds of things. We should be doing that. But I see a lot of this as predating what they're calling the throwaway society. Well, no, I see it more as before our jobs were taken away and shipped overseas
well
in the manufacturing.
Well said.
Vicki, we're going to have you back and talk about this. And I think going forward, we'll have many shows on low carbon economy and this transition. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio with Don Wyatt. We thank you for listening to This Hour of America in the Balance. Our guest today has been Vicki Davis. And we thank you for listening. May God bless.